Hey guys, this is Cole Weicher.
Hi, I'm Neil Collins.
This is Jochen Graf.
And you're listening to The Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood, I...
Ball's gonna bounce down. It's free in the box. Bicycle kick! Goal! Roddy's! What a play! What a shot! And it's 1-0 Roddy's!
Good evening, everyone, and thank you once again for joining us tonight. You are listening to the Unused Substitute Show. We are your green and gold gospel. We are your only source for year-round Rowdy's coverage. We are coming at you live on Radio St. Pete Online and part of the Beautiful Game Network, presented by Roughneck Scarves. My name is Stephen Cundiff. Joining me tonight, at least at the moment, Matthew Cox, sir, I understand you are starting getting back to work now, my friend.
Oh, crap. Is that what I was supposed to be doing this week? I felt like I've been forgetting something.
I mean,
the good news is, like, the way the world is right now, like, I'm probably not fired. It's okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's let's face it, everything is upside down. Your camera's upside down. The everything's upside down. It is. The Rowdy's are a bit upside down. Let's be real. That's kind of the way it feels. I think the way that, like, U.S. soccer is right now, it feels a bit upside down. It just. All right. Tonight, our Patreon executive producer is David Klabo. Thank you, thank you, thank you for being an executive Patreon level supporter of the show. It definitely and most certainly helps, and we appreciate all of the support that you give to us on a monthly basis and yearly basis, as I know he's been a supporter for a couple years now on the Patreon side. Again, we'll visit it later in the back end of the show, but again, Patreon is, without question, one of the best ways you can support what we do. If you want to tweet at us during the show, the master account, the head of them all, the one that ruled them all, at Unused Subs Pod is the big one. There is a tweet out there asking for viewer listener questions, so if you do have something, feel free to drop a line, drop a question. We'll see what we can do on a quick on-the-spot answer. If you want to tweet at either one of us directly while we're on the air or during the week, if you're just curious, at @_S_Cundiff is my Twitter handle. At @unsub_Matt is, of course, Matthews.
It's me.
So, soccer game happened this weekend, and it was, in this case, the one we're talking about is the Tampa Bay Rowdies. They were in Charlotte in this, if you want to call it a refurbished stadium. It still looked like mostly bleachers and concrete, but a familiar feeling comes out of this match for the Tampa Bay Rowdies, and that is another road loss. Another road loss against a team we've already played before. Another road loss where we had very little in the way on actual shots on target. Matt, I'm catching tendencies and patterns and repetitions. and I am concerned.
Yeah, I can't say I blame you. To be 100% honest, and I think I just dropped this on you right before the show started, I haven't even watched the game. I was out taking the pod daughter out back to school shopping and was out for dinner with her. And it's kind of difficult to get up the desire to go and watch it when you know how abject it's going to be. So I haven't sat down to properly watch the game yet, but a 2-0 loss, like, kind of speaks for itself. I'm actually kind of glad it ended up that way, because in this little streak we've been on for a while, what is it, like 4 of the last 6 and 6 or 7 of the last 10 have been losses. There's like a 1-0 in there, you know, a bunch of 2-1s, and it's always been like, oh, you know, the clock ran out on us before we could get back. We haven't played well outside of teams that we absolutely should be beating, like Loudon. Like, there's a lot of kind of excuse making. If to me it feels like, these like late goals or fancy Leo Fernandez goals in the second half, like, start to like paper over, like, well, it was close, it wasn't that bad, we were unlucky. No, we haven't been unlucky, we've been bad.
Well, okay, so we're going to dive into this, because there's certainly points to be made, and there are definitely things to discuss, because without question, I think at this point it's safe to say that we have moved on from the it's just a bump to the it's a concerning phase. I think most people that follow the Tampa Bay Rowdies very closely are now concerned about what's happened with the tendency of this club. We go to Charlotte. As we mentioned, Rowdies lose 2-0 against 2 second half goals. We play a starting lineup that, by all accounts, looks strong. By all accounts, was, if I'm not mistaken, was very close to what we did with Loudon, though I don't have it the imaging side by side with me. Relatively speaking, it's what most people would come to expect, and it's what most people would tend to enjoy as far as the positioning of players. But yet, at the end of the day, one shot on goal. Now, there's going to be an interesting question about where stats betray. And you've mentioned this already about, you know, did the Rowdies play a good game or did they play a bad game? And this is where I think stats sometimes can betray a bit of thinking. Because you haven't seen the game, so you're relying based on stats. I've watched the game twice now. And it actually wasn't as bad as I thought it was the second time around. Which is funny, because I think
I haven't even watched one. It's called self-care, sweetie.
Well, it's funny because it was like the same impression that I had from one of the past losses. I think it was the Miami game. I mentioned the same thing on air. After a second watching, it did actually look better than it did live. We had a good amount of possession, 62%. I think we had 13 shots overall. Some of them were from range, from distance. You know, Jordan Scarlett had a good shot. Lewis Hilton had a good shot from distance. I think Connor Antley at one point had a decent shot from distance. There were moments where we were moving the ball extremely well. Couple of back heels lead from one pass to another, dribbling through like 2 or 3 players, like just fighting through, sometimes like, very specifically, Lawrence Weick earning a free kick in a corner by pushing his way through two Charlotte defenders. There were a lot of good moments throughout the match. I am still baffled by what this tactical formation, how it uses the attacking midfielder role, and I still don't think that Steinberger is a good option up front. it's funny because I don't want to beat a dead horse, right? The fact is that I have mentioned Steinberger many times. I've mentioned the attacking midfield several times. But if you go back and look at the stat passing for this game, if you look at the passing map, we're not putting through balls in. We're not generating, like in terms of like passes into the box, you didn't get any of them in the first half, really. And in the second half, I think you had like two or three, I think, in the entirety of the second half.
Mm-hmm.
We're dancing the ball around the outside, you know, going from the outside mids to the defense. And as the awful commentating crew on Saturday mentioned on air several times, recycling. We did a great job of recycling the ball back and forth, which has been a very Rowdy's tendency. But, you know, players like Jan Ekrit just didn't really dribble through the middle a bit. You know, there were times that he did in the first half, and then as the game wound on, it stopped. And it's interesting because I actually think they didn't play that bad. We were a bit unlucky with the first goal. Lawrence Wyk receives a ball. It was a ball that got hit up in the air as a weak clearance from Charlotte. It lands relatively between him and Jordan Scarlett. And he actually looks over to Jordan and waves Jordan off the ball. Takes a look behind him. But you could tell that he had no idea that there was a player that was approaching him between those two lines of sight. From calling Jordan off in front of him to turning around and looking behind him, his head must have swept fast enough that he just didn't catch the Charlotte player in the middle of the field that was kind of slowly coming at him. So when Lawrence gathers that ball and takes a touch to start moving the ball back upfield, all of a sudden it's like both players just have this like sudden realization of, oh crap, there's a player right there. The Charlotte player was like, oh wow, that ball's actually far enough, I can intercede on that. And Lawrence Wyk is like, oh, I can't touch the ball that far forward. I think that was an entirely incidental play that just happened at random. But as I tweeted during the game, we don't have a player on the Tampa Bay Rowdies that can do what Dane Kelly did on that play. And we also don't get the opportunity to do what Dane Kelly did on that play, which is split the defense on a quick counter because there's only three defenders in the back. The Tampa Bay Rowdies don't play teams very often that have a dedicated three-back system. We certainly don't have anybody that can actually exploit that gap with pace and beat a defender, because he was able to avoid two defenders, you know, certainly Lasso on the slide tackle there. I don't know. Right now, if you were to ask me if there's a player on the Rowdies that can make that run, I would tell you no, there isn't. Now, I know that there are going to be people that are going to say, well, what about the last game in New York when Jordan Adebayo-Smith did it? Yeah, well, he wasn't beating defenders off the ball. He just happened to run through them. Dane Kelly literally physically manhandled and touched two players on his run. It's a little different. And that's where those situations can be a little different.
You mentioned Adebayo-Smith there for a second, and I just coincidentally was taking a look at the Match Center page on the USL Championship website about this game. So it's another game where we've gone in again due to injuries with a small bench, but only used 4 out of 5 possible subs. Adebayo-Smith's the only guy who's left on the bench. Why doesn't he get in at some point?
If we're being honest, his performances have not been great. Outside of the one play in New York, he has missed several one-on-ones with keepers. he has been completely absent when it comes to a full 90-minute stretch or the games that he starts where he's just not getting involved in the play, the run of play. You know, especially the home game here in front of the mob section, he whiffed on a couple of, like, very obvious shots that he needed to at least put on frame, and he just was whiffing the opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And we mentioned on air in past episodes, those types of moments will add up, and eventually a coach is going to just pull you. Gunzotti, while he makes mistakes like that too, has demonstrated he can pull through it. Time and again, Jordan is a younger kid. He doesn't have that track record. There's no reason to believe that Jordan can pull it through in the end. And Neil has given him opportunities, several, up until this point. And unfortunately, Jordan just hasn't pulled through. Now, I'm not saying he can't. I'm not saying that he won't. But at this moment in time, if you're asking me whether I think we should put in Lucky M. Cassano or Jordan Adebayo Smith, I'm picking Lucky. Just because track records and age and experience.
I mean, yeah, but at that point, Lucky had already... Lucky came on in the 60th minute.
Yes.
And maybe it's just frustration talking, you know, with what we say, 7 out of the last 10 have been losses. Like, okay, maybe he doesn't have the track record and hasn't demonstrated that he's, you know, going to fight through it, but he's never going to if he doesn't get the chance. And at some point, you know, you don't have any other options. Like, you know, we've seen sometimes some of the teams that come to Al Lang, like, okay, what they're trying isn't working. We're going to bring on a couple other guys and maybe we're going to switch the formation up a little bit. Maybe we're going to try a little something different. It just seems like with us sometimes it's like, well, this isn't working. We're going to put another guy on and try the same thing and hope that something else happens.
Well, in this game, one of the things is because we'd already put in Lucky, there was essentially what you're saying is that where would you put Jordan and who would you sub him in for? Are you suggesting that we would take out Gunzotti in favor of Jordan Adebayo Smith? In which case I'd say you're crazy. Now you have a disadvantage that you didn't get to see the game.
Yeah. I'm at the point now where I'm like, put in Raiko or Rosarena and let him play forward and just cross the ball into him. He's a tall guy.
So here's the thing, right? Jordan, and it's funny because you mentioned against New York earlier, the goal that he scored. Jordan plays better when there's open space involved. Charlotte was not giving us a lot of space in this game. You know, we had a good amount of possession. They were playing a slightly bunkered in system. It's essentially what they did in the first game.
Right.
And as proven time and again for like a couple of years now, we don't break down bunkered teams very well for whatever reason. But of the players that can do that, that can potentially be that type of striker, goal scorer, Gunzotti is an established goal scorer when it comes to picking up plays in crowded areas. He's not looking for a through ball. He's just looking for the ball in general. Adebayo Smith absolutely is a through ball type striker. He doesn't have the same nose to goal. On the flip side, I'll throw this out at you. Leaving aside Steven Dos Santos, because he would have been a starter if this game, you know, if he's healthy. This is a kind of game that Juan Tejada would have been a very fantastic second half substitution for.
Okay.
100%. That's a substitution that I would bet right now Neil Collins would have said, if this was an alternate timeline in the MCU and we're going to a different sidebar universe, if Juan Tejada's healthy, I'm putting him in that match. That's exactly the type of game that he would have been good at.
I got to think at this point, Neil's thinking about subbing himself on.
Well, you know, and it's funny because, like, this game, while you don't see a lot of passing, like, into the box, you did see a lot of shooting from distance, but it also wasn't a game where there was a ton of crossing. What's interesting about this particular match, and I think why most people got really frustrated with this match, is that for large stretches of the game, the Rowdies just weren't threatening, like, at all. You know, it's one thing if you're putting in 50 crosses. You know, look at the game against Hartford, where it's just cross after cross after cross, and there's like 55.5 million blocked shots, and, you know, Hartford builds the Great Wall of China in front of the goal, and we just keep hitting the dang wall. That wasn't this game. This game was basically the 13 scoring chances really felt like that was the only times we threatened for the entirety of the 90 minutes.
Right.
Which I know seems a little contradictory. Well, of course the shots would be your most threatening moments, but not all threatening moments in a game and build up end up in a shot.
Mm-hmm.
I know it seems contrary, but it's true. And this was one of those games where it's just outside of those 13 opportunities, there just was nothing in between. And there was a little bit of frustration because of that. But overall, we didn't get played off the pitch. It was a poor clearance off of a set piece and a random weird turnover that led to a breakaway goal in the middle that just people were out of position for. We weren't played off the pitch by any stretch. Evan Lauro did not have to make a single save that match outside of the two goals that were scored against him. He had no saves on the night because there were no other shots on goal the whole night.
I think the part that's kind of blowing my mind, and maybe there's a logical explanation for it, is Charlotte out-intercepts the Rowdies 18-6. Which makes you think maybe just, you know, not a great night passing the ball around. But then you should look at the passing stats. Rowdies with an 84% passing accuracy compared to 75 for Charlotte. 77% accuracy in the opponent's half as opposed to 60 for Charlotte. Like, I don't know how to make those two numbers make sense. I mean, part of it is that the Rowdies had 200 more passes than Charlotte.
Yeah, there's weight of scale there for sure. Again, it was just one of those weird. It's a weird match to break down because of what happened. And again, like, I don't think we got played off the pitch by any stretch. And like I said, it's frustrating because we didn't have more than a single shot on target. I honestly believe that it should have been two shots on target. At one point, I think the statisticians actually did give credit for Max Lekaweki's header at the very, very end of the match. For some reason, the keeper caught the ball in the air on a header that was going towards frame, and they didn't call it a shot on goal. I'm not really sure how that works. So I think it should have been two. By the way, we'll get to this in Good, Bad, Ugly, but while we had these high percentage numbers, there was also, like I said, a lot of just non-threatening buildups, and that's because of interceptions. The passing sometimes just was not very good.
Right.
And I think a lot of that just has to do with the fact that we've got a very invisible, you know, center attacking mid, especially when you look at the last, call it maybe 30 minutes of the game, 20 to 30 minutes of the game, because, and this is the reason why I'm going to bring this up, Max Lekaweki comes in as a substitute, and he comes in at left midfield. That means that Fernandez now moves into the middle, but his role in the middle was not very well defined, and I really didn't even notice he was there, because he's usually standing next to somebody else. And so he was never presenting, like, a different option for a pass. Like, he looked legitimately lost playing as a dedicated center mid. or striker if him and Guenzotti were like flip-flopping on an individual play. We weren't doing a very good job of filling that middle section, having somebody drop in to get a pass, to turn, to try and dribble something into the middle of the field, something that players like Jan Ekra do pretty well. It just didn't translate into the last 20 to 30 minutes.
I just want someone to do something. That's the extent of my analysis here. Like, everything's not working. And you know, the tweets after the game, and to their credit, it's never the coaches, it's never the players. It's mostly us fans that are like, well, it's away. Well, it's a bad surface. It's, you know, these guys are injured. Like, you can't have a team built around, and I'm not saying this is what they did, but it seems like this is the way some people look at it. Like, you can't expect a team to be built around one person, or a team that can only play on one type of surface, or, you know, only does well at home. Like, it's now two games we've lost to Charlotte, who are still 4 points, even after this result, 4 points back, 5 points if you count the live results tonight, like from a playoff spot. Like, this put them 6 points ahead of New York that we're playing this weekend and is just abysmal. And still 2 points behind Charleston, who has not been great all year either. Like, this is not a good team. The good news is we don't have to go to Charlotte again this year, I guess. So, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, we beat them once down here. We've only got to face them one more time. But, you know, it's like last year when Charleston had our number. But last year Charleston was a good team. Like, this is not a good team. And, yeah, you want to win every game. Is it realistic to expect it? No, but to have not gotten a draw out of at least one of these games in Charlotte just blows my mind.
You know, one of the things that's interesting about this match and some of the trends with the Tampa Bay Rowdies is it's noteworthy that this is the first game the Rowdies have lost by more than a goal. Which, again, by itself might not necessarily be a big problem. But in the context of what the last, like, 10 games have looked like, seems like it's no longer just, you know, close games or whatever. Now we're giving up multi-goal games in this group of losses. You know, it's you start to feel like if other teams have all figured us out, then what's the rest of this year going to look like? Because one thing that Charlotte's head coach said after they had, and again, everybody does this, right? The first game of the season, nobody gives a crap about your performance the first game of the season. After you get about four games in, you can just eliminate all those games. The first, like, four games, just throw them out the window, right? Tampa Bay Rowdies are looking at that right now. You could take our first four games, and you could say, what the hell ever, doesn't matter. We don't care about that. None of those games matter. Everybody's new. We were a returning roster pretty much by and large. None of that matters anymore. The Charlotte coach looked and said, you know what? We went back and we studied specifically what we did that worked against the Rowdies back on June 5th. And they set out to make a game plan that did that again. And guess what? It worked. And funny enough, our performance against them looked a lot like what it did the first time around, too.
Right.
We're not at panic stage, but we're definitely in the middle of concerned. I think without a doubt, we're in the concern stage. This is a problem. It's no longer just a bump.
I'm at, like, trembling concern.
I mean, look, we still have people coming back. We've got people in training. You know, there's room for optimism. You know, we just beat Loudon 3-1 last week, so it could be a heck of a lot worse, because if we had drawn or lost to Loudon, that'd be a heck of a lot, you know, worse position. But, you know, there's room for optimism. But this stinks. And it's becoming a, you know, we were talking about it, like, no draws on the year.
Mm-hmm.
Is that just happenstance, or is there something specific for that? Well, it's a little of both. I mean, obviously, happenstance is one of them without question. But when you're looking at a team that has as many losses as we do on the year, and we have not been able to come back and get a late draw in any of those matches, that's really, really frustrating, especially since all but one of them has been a single-goal game. We've proven that once we can take a lead, we're pretty good at closing those games out and dictating right. that pace. We don't give up leads very well or very easily. But we seem to have this really big problem with pulling ourselves out of deficits to at least earn a draw.
Yeah. I mean, only two other teams have lost more games than we have, and they're both sitting outside the playoffs. One of them, Charlotte. Miami has lost just as many games as us, and depending on how tonight's game goes for them, I think it's still level at one. They could leapfrog us into second because they've got fewer wins, but they have two draws on the season where they've managed to pull some points out of games that we haven't been able to do that. Only one other club, I believe it's the whole USL, because I think it was last time we said there's only one other club that doesn't have a draw, and that's Loudon, because they suck.
So,
I don't want to suck.
So, final thoughts on this match, good, bad, ugly type stuff. I will say this, my good for the night, because I believe he absolutely deserves a shout. If you follow me on Twitter and if you were following me during the game, you would know this is probably the direction I'm going to take. Max Lakowecki, this man comes on the field, takes a cross the field switch, one-time volleys a pass through to Leo Fernandez and produces almost one of the best scoring opportunities we have with, I believe, it was his first touch of the game. And then proceeded after that to then win several more balls, put in a couple of more good passes, and actually gave us one awesome threat on the left-hand side as one of the only players, he was working a lot with Leo, to get into the box and actually make passes into the box area. Because on the right-hand side of the field, it literally didn't happen. You can go back and you can look at the passing maps for completed and for, you know, incomplete passes. And there's very little in the way coming up on the right-hand side of the field. But on the left side of the field, after Lakowecki comes in, there is a major presence in the box on that side of the field. So that's my good. He's my shout. In fact, for a game like this, I'm going to give him man of the match because I felt like his presence in that match, the Leo Fernandez shot and then the build up to the play that led to a Lewis Hilton shot, and I think even the build up to the play that had the Jordan Scarlett all showed up on the left, but the Jordan Scarlett shot was before he was on the field. But yeah, I'm Lakowecki for me is my good. He's my man of the match. And I was encouraged by the work rate and the effort he put in on that game.
My good is that we don't have to go back to Charlotte again this year.
Yeah, but I love Matt. I'm sorry, Adam.
Yeah.
But I love Adam, and I miss Adam.
We haven't gotten the results this year. I mean, I guess you could say there's always the playoffs, but even though they've won two over us so far, Charlotte's not going to make the playoffs.
Playoffs? At this point, with the rate that we're going, the Tampa Bay Rowdies don't make the playoffs. Do I need to
don't
break
look now.
Do I need
the,
to... do I need to bring up points per game? And if you exclude the first like two or three matches, are points per game trends?
No, you don't want me to do that. Don't talk about math.
Playoffs.
Yeah. Oh.
Well, let's talk about the rest of the league here.
All right. Other results from last weekend. Pittsburgh knocked off Hartford 3-1. That allowed Pittsburgh to jump into the top spot in the Atlantic Division. Miami over Charleston 3-2. And Red Bulls 2 traveled way out west to Sacramento and lost 3-1. While looking that up, I was reminded of maybe the best West Coast game you'll get all season is happening sometime this week between Sacramento and Tacoma, and that's great because that's going to be SacTac. That's a good hashtag. I'm there for that one. Upcoming games. Tonight we have Hartford and Miami going into the last 20 minutes or so, still level at one each. A Miami win would put Miami over us in the standings. A draw would put them level on points, but behind on total wins, so that would keep us in second place for now. A Hartford win would put them equal on points with Miami in a two-way tie for third there. And actually, they would leapfrog on goal difference because Miami's only at a +2 and Hartford's at a +9. So your current Atlantic Division standings look like, and I'm going to attempt to factor in live scoring or live results here as we go do a little live table. Pittsburgh's on top, 30 points, have won 4 out of their last 5, drawn the other. Rowdies, second place, 27 points, lost 4 of their last 5. Miami at 26 points, actually right now technically 27 if the results hold. They've gone the opposite way of us in form, have won 4 of their last 5. Hartford with 24. Those would be your playoff teams if the playoffs started today. Then your next 4, your 4 out are Charleston at 21, Charlotte 19, Red Bulls this weekend's opponent at 13, and Loudon 6 points, minus 19 goal difference. I think it should just be a rule. Once you hit minus 20, you're automatically eliminated from the playoffs regardless of the rest of your record. It just should be a thing. Red Bulls are just one more Hartford game away. Remember, Hartford dropped that 7-goal game on them. That would put them at 21, so just knock them out. So things suck, but as David Morales pointed out on Twitter, if you throw out those first 4 games, as you said, don't really matter in the long run of the season. Those 4 games are keeping us where we're at because we're 5-6 outside of those 4 games. That's not good.
And more importantly, if you compare that stretch of games to the rest of the conference or division, it's even more concerning. That's the thing that stinks.
Yeah. And looking ahead at the schedule for the rest of the season, as I was doing today when I hung the schedule poster back up in my classroom, 17 games remaining, 10 of which are on the road. Got to find a way to get points again on the road.
Yes, sir.
Just have to. Otherwise, it's over.
So. Well, conditions being what they are and changing your life around a little bit. David Najem, after a stint with the Afghan national team and, having to go through all of the waiting procedures and all of the COVID restrictions going from cross borders and everything else, has finally landed back on his feet. Yes, the former Rowdy is back at New Mexico United, so good for him after a national team stint. We still love our former players, unless you're Valentine and you're a coach of Orlando. That's the only exception to the rule. Otherwise, we're proud of our guys. We always want to give them a mention, and also finding their way home. Oakland, speaking of, after the modular field setup, temporary turf from hell, Rio OKC of legend disaster, that has been the start of their season. They have finally got themselves new turf. It arrived, I believe, today. It's supposed to only take like a couple hours to install compared to the like week that it took to install the Rio turf, the way that the rules and setup procedure is. But yes, Oakland, after all this time, finally has their turf. Is that
I'll believe it when the match actually kicks off.
That's true.
Because now, even they mentioned in their tweet, you know,
it still has to go through all of the approval,
depending on, you know, approval by the match officials on that day.
Yep. I don't know if it's enough to like save the franchise from the embarrassment that has been the start of this season. I don't know if this will save them in that market, but I mean, good for them. I want everybody to be successful. I just, yeah, it's a problem. Along with, for example, Austin Bold came out in the Striker Tejas podcast website that the owner of Austin Bold, who of course owns Circuit of the Americas, where the stadium that they play in is built, allegedly is actively shopping the USL Championship franchise that he is operating under currently. Not only that, but the front office staff for that club, officially designated for that club, is down to like two or three, allegedly. For example, they don't have any ticketing sales staff dedicated to the Austin Bold anymore. The only people that are even attempting to sell tickets are the people associated with Circuit of the Americas. So you've got that issue, which, let's face it, we kind of all saw coming when Austin got their MLS franchise, and that was always a torpedoing moment. And in fact, I was even kind of half surprised that Austin Bold went through with building their stadium when it came out that Austin was going to be getting a MLS franchise. I'm surprised that they just didn't pull out immediately. But so that means that Austin Bold's in the air. We already know that Charlotte's trying to figure out what they're doing with that USL Championship franchise. You have the major pullout of teams with all the two teams leaving, you know, in a, whether next year or 2 years. And then, of course, you've got the conversation about ProRel that might start in as recently as five. There's going to be it's lower division American soccer, Russian roulette.
It's extremely lower division.
Oh, God, it's going to be insane what the next 5 years is going to look like, because so many teams are going to be bouncing back and forth and dying and getting started. And you've got the MLS D3 league in there now, where you've got groups in places like Rochester. And wasn't there another one like more local to us or something like that of another group maybe? Oh, that's right. I think that was the conversation with Charlotte, maybe something like that.
Right. So basically, this is Jacksonville's chance to jump in.
Yeah. Speaking of other markets,
there's a guy there somewhere who will pay their closing costs, I heard.
That's true. The other comments that were made on that podcast as far as other landing spots is apparently there's a group in Fort Worth. I think we've heard those rumors before of a Fort Worth-based soccer team. That's been going on for a long time for different leagues. I think even NASL was talking to somebody in Fort Worth for a bit, going back all the way to 2012. But Corpus Christi.
I'll tell you the tweet in a second.
Okay. Corpus Christi apparently is another place. Corpus Christi apparently actually has like an ownership group that is known to be shopping for a soccer franchise, the level of which is not quite clear, but that is, they're in the market for potentially joining USL. So that's going to be interesting to look at as a potential professional soccer, whether League One or League Two, League One or championship level, either way. All right, Matt, what do you got?
I'm dying. You can see my reaction here. Yeah, let's Austin can sell their franchise rights to Jacksonville and continue the storied tradition of moving Austin teams to Florida.
Oh man.
Like I know he did, what was it? What did he, I know David just won. What was it? It was a soccer ball or a jersey or something.
Yeah. Soccer ball.
He gave it to him. Yeah. He just, I got the Seba Guinzotti stickers in. He just won one of those too. Next home game, remind me. That gets an El Capitan sticker. That's fantastic.
Oh man. It's, that is actually really funny if that turns out to happen. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That being said, if anybody's listening with any amount of power at all, please, for the love of God, get Jacksonville in USL Championship. For the love of all things holy, please. Please.
Because that would be my answer for one of the listener questions that we're going to get to in a second if that happened.
Yeah. Well, stepping aside from lower division American soccer hell, because at this point with the Rowdies on a streak that we are, everything is just on fire. It's all hell at the moment. Yeah, and I don't care what anybody says. There were a couple of very important national team games that happened this weekend. U.S. women and U.S. men. And it's funny because in some ways, they kind of mirror each other in a very interesting way.
I'm trying to find the controls to flip my image upside down because we have the U.S. men overachieving and winning tournaments and the U.S. women having to settle for the third place game in a tournament against a team that I believe they drew the first time they played.
Yeah.
I'm not used to this.
So U.S. men defeats Mexico, a B Mexico squad. Okay, it wasn't like a full squad of lineup. I think it was 7 starters from the Nations League final. Meanwhile, of course, the U.S. soccer team was using every scrub player known to man because we were not using any of the players of the $250 million worth of European transfer fees that have been spent on players that were playing in the Nations League tournament. Yeah, none of those players played.
Well, yeah, because they're not being released from their clubs in Europe because they're getting ready for the season.
Correct. But it's worth pointing out, just because we're Americans and absolutely we're going to do this, that USA game was amazing. They did not look phased at all.
No.
And it was remarkable because both teams, Mexico and U.S., definitely had their scoring chances. Multiple scoring chances. I mean, that game very easily could have been a 2-2 game going into, penalty kicks. Both teams should have legitimately scored more than one goal. But my goodness, how amazing is that to do it? And the FIFA rankings came out after the Gold Cup got weighed in.
Mm-hmm.
And FIFA's system, because of course the USA beat Qatar and Mexico, actually puts us, I believe the number is at 9. Or
wow.
Something like that. Something like really stupid high.
Like that time USF was number 2 in the BCS rankings.
Yes.
Didn't win another game for the rest of the season.
Exactly like that. Yeah. We are now presently ranked. We went up 11 spaces on the FIFA chart to the 9th position. Mexico went from 11th to 10th from that match. Now, the reason why FIFA does that, their formula is heavily weighing Qatar because Qatar won the Asian tournament. And that's the reason why we got so many points for that, because we went through the Asian tournament champions and then won our domestic, quote-unquote, domestic continental tournament. That's why we go in. That's why we got the boost that we did.
So now we are CONCACAF and Asian Confederation champions, right?
100%. 100%.
We've unified the belts. Cool.
I will say this. There was some conversation about how does this impact USA Soccer going forward. For one thing, it absolutely revitalizes, I think, the entire fan base. This summer, if you were a U.S. Soccer fan, more specifically men's than women's, because obviously the women's have been good for decades, but if you're the men's fan, and you were a men's fan, say, 6 years ago, and you were on the periphery, you weren't a hardcore, you've probably been asleep for the last, like, 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
This summer will reawaken all of those people. How can you not? So that's exciting. That's amazing that, you know, we're going to start World Cup qualifying, and our fan base, I fully believe, is going to be awake for this. Like, this is going to be very, very, very fun to watch. The atmospheres, the stadiums are going to be rocking, I believe. I also think I made a comment about the fact that, I'm pretty sure ticket prices are going to go skyrocketing again because, you know, good old U.S. soccer. But one of the interesting things about the Mexico game was the indirect impact. Everybody was looking at the U.S. men's team going, hey, you know, how are these players now going to compete for starting level positions in the U.S. national team against all of these European players? I'm going to tell you this right now. The answer to that's basically going to be none of them. The answer is going to be none. You look at the roster of players that were not there for the Gold Cup that are in Europe at first division level clubs. None of those guys are going to be getting beat for a starting role. Like, I'm sorry. It's just at most this tournament improves their positions for getting the second spot on the roster for their particular position. That's really all this does. What it absolutely 100% did for these kids on the field for the Gold Cup final is it made every one of them a now marketable piece for international transfers.
Mm-hmm.
That is what it did. We have a whole generation of starting 11 players that are in Europe. Like I said, the accumulative total of transfer fees in Europe that were not there for the Gold Cup final was over $250 million worth. That number is going to skyrocket because of what you saw this summer. And if these guys from the Gold Cup team come back to their club teams in MLS and continue to perform well, I think you're going to see another major exodus of talent to Europe. And in all honesty, that's a good thing. As much as we want to see the stars, you know, we'd love to watch these guys play in the U.S. But the fact is, if they're going to Europe, it's better football, period. It just is.
Speaking of exodus of talent, kind of the opposite way, flip the other side of the coin. U.S. women who will be playing Australia tomorrow morning at 4:00 for the bronze medal in the Olympics.
I love the women, but I'm not waking up for that one. I did wake up for the Friday match. I'm not waking up for this one.
No. And I love the women. Yeah, but no. Especially not the first week back to work. Just no. So, like, I haven't had a chance to watch, like, the really early ones. I haven't had a chance to really watch those live. I have seen one game. I believe it was their second match because they dropped the first one and won the second one. And then I think drew the third in the group and then won their first knockout and then lost 1-0 to Canada. And this is kind of, again, you talked about how the two sides kind of mirrored each other, where the U.S. went into the Gold Cup with a very, very young squad and even had to make some replacements for injuries. The U.S. women's went with a very veteran squad. This was going to be kind of like a send-off for some of these players. It was going to be their last major tournament. It was like a group testimonial.
Yep.
And they're not going to come home with the gold. And a lot of people question taking the older group. And, you know, watching the game the other day that went to penalties, where they advanced to the next round after winning the penalty shootout. Like that was an extremely sticky situation, because that roster is not the roster you want playing 90 minutes plus another 30 minutes of extra time. But that is the roster you want in a penalty shootout. By the way, Hartford and Miami finished level at 1, so Rowdies will maintain a slight advantage over both of those clubs.
When Vlatko Andonovsky was hired as the women's coach, he was given two directives. Take the current team and win the Olympics, and then hit the reset button and start us with a new crop of players going into the next World Cup cycle. What's remarkable to me is that's essentially the same thing that Jurgen Klinsmann was told 4 years ago with the men's. Mm-hmm. Take this group of guys and let's make one more run at it with this group of players. And yet, here we are again, where top-down management doesn't freaking work. The U.S. women's was the oldest average team in the tournament. Number one team in the world with the oldest average team on the tournament. That's a problem. That is legitimately a problem. You can't... When I think the issue here is the fact that we were going into this saying, you know what, we're going to give all of our veteran players a pass this year on making this roster because we want all of these players to win another gold. Not whether they really earned it, per se. Not whether it's the smartest decision to make, but it was pretty much just... This is the decision we're making, whether it's good or not, and this is what we expect you to do with this roster, Vlatko. Now, I'm going to say this right now. If you're happy that the women lost because of politics or the stuff that's been going on with the equal pay stuff and all this kind of thing, and people are like, oh, it's Rapinoe's fault and she deserved... If you ever utter the words they deserved to lose... Get the hell right out. Right now. Just leave.
Like, literally eat a bag of dicks. And by bag of dicks, I mean Indy 11's goalkeeper.
First of all.
Whose last name is Dick. Like a bunch of him stuffed in a bag. Eat that bag.
First of all, it ain't Megan Rapinoe's fault. First of all. Let me just throw this out there. She was a bench player that got subbed into those games. It ain't her fault. Secondly, you know whose fault it really was because they had poor tournaments? Look at Tobin Heath. Look at Lindsay Horan. Look at Rose Lavelle. They did not play well against the good teams.
Yeah.
You want to point fingers? That's Alex Morgan didn't play particularly great. Kristen Press was a little out of position, so I'm not going to judge her too harshly. The United States had a 20-year undefeated record against Canada, and everybody went into this game, or like people that don't watch American women's soccer were looking at this going, well, this is an embarrassment. How did we lose to Canada? We always beat Canada. This is a scandal. No, it's not. They're a top 10 team in the world. There was no reason that we had a 20-year undefeated streak against Canada. That should never have happened. That is the most dumb luck statistic ever. Canada was ranked, what, 8th in the world going into this tournament? You're not supposed to have a 20-year undefeated streak from number 1 to number 8. That's not supposed to happen.
There are a lot of really good young players in the pipeline. They didn't take a lot to this tournament. There's a lot out there. Like there's reason to be hopeful about the women's side as well, too. And you know, this is going to be the last time you see some of these players pulling on the U.S. shirt, and it kind of sucks because it's been probably the best group we've had in quite some time, even going back to the 99ers who won the World Cup the first time. But there's some exciting players coming up behind him. So it, you know, it sucks for right now. But this, between other countries catching up and you know, this kind of generation winding down, this was going to happen.
Yeah.
And I'd rather it happen in the Olympics than in the Women's World Cup. So I can kind of deal with it, I guess.
With women's soccer, you know, if you look at like all four teams that were in the semifinals were all top 10 teams in the world. Right now, I think without question, number 1 through number 10 are pretty much well even. I think those games, and they've been for several years now, those games have been coin flips. USA versus Germany, that's a coin flip. I don't care if it's a friendly or a major tournament. There's no guarantee. USA, Sweden. Sweden was like, what, the only team that beat Vladko in the last like couple of years leading up into this, I think was the only other. He was literally, that was the only team he had lost to was Sweden. It was not a surprise to see them beat the crap out of us in that opening group stage match because it's Sweden. They're a top 10 team in the world. That wasn't a fluke when they played earlier. It's because Sweden is literally that good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, USA playing Netherlands, that's a coin flip. It's been a coin flip for a long time.
I mean, it literally was, basically.
I think the issue here was the fact that we didn't have enough young blood in this roster. And I think that U.S. soccer was too heavy-handed with Vlatko about the roster-building process for this to make it a legitimate success and to make an actual, like, real, true run at it as far as a Gold Cup goes. And I think that had more to do with it than individual player performances. Were some of the players off? Yes, they were, but, and there's no doubt about that. But the roster construction, I think, could have been better. Could have been more well-rounded. Yeah, and again, I think it wasn't a big surprise. All credit to Canada. They deserved it, 100%. They just deserved it because they're a top 10 team in the world, and it's good for them to finally get a chance to play for a gold. I believe it's the first time they've ever made it to a Gold Cup match in the Olympics, so if memory serves. So,
probably.
You know, good for them. They're deserving of it. It's absolutely, like, you know, we always make fun of teams like England, men's soccer, for being, you know, the home of soccer, you know, around the world type of thing, and then they never win these tournaments. I want them to genuinely win a tournament because it's been, like, it's not fair that they can be as good as they've been and not, you know, win a trophy. You know, it's, I hate seeing teams go on streaks like that. You know, I hate the fact that, like, the Cleveland Browns in football have been terrible for, like, 40 years. Like, that sucks. That's not fun for anybody. That just sucks. You know, the Buffalo Bills, what is it, 4 Super Bowls, and they lost all 4, like, right now. Like, that sucks. You know, like, that's just not fun. It's funny to a point, but that's also miserable. So, good for Canada. I'm happy for them. You know, either way that goes, gold, silver, I think is, I mean, it's no question about it. It's an accomplishment for either team, either country.
I mean, I will definitely be blatantly cheering for Canada as you know, I frequently reference pod daughter, but also pod mother being my mother, born in Canada, and tomorrow is her birthday, a rather significant milestone one. So, and she cares absolutely nothing about it. Probably doesn't even know it's happening, but I'll be hoping that the girls give her that for the birthday.
Evelyn Veens, I think is the name, right?
That's, yep. Veens, Viend, maybe, I don't know, but yeah.
To a certain point, you almost want to root for them. Like, let's be real. I think I'd be probably rooting for them, but it is it. Pia Sundhage is still the coach of Sweden, right?
Quite possibly.
I think so. So, I mean,
we'll
like
just
you said,
take confidence and we'll go with it.
Both ways. You know, it's going to be fun to watch. And I just hope it's a good game, to be honest. Well, Matt, it's been a fun night. We've had some fun talk, some fun banter.
Got some questions. You want to do some questions?
Let's do some questions.
All right. And thanks, everybody, because I meant to do this earlier in the day, but then got all caught up in, like, together a classroom and didn't get to it. So thanks for getting we got some responses to the tweet, even though I sent it out, like, 45 minutes before the show started. First question from our friend Patrick, Patty Ice.
Oh boy.
If you could take a train trip for an away game, what city would you want to go to, with the caveat of you have to name another major metropolitan area that the route goes through? I was talking about this with some of the Skyway guys last year. I would love to do a train trip, and I think some of them did it last year. A train trip to a game and then back home. So I have Amtrak route map up on my other monitor, and I'm gonna, you know, technically you could just, you know, connect Tampa to, like, anywhere. There is a route that ends in Oakland, like, you could go to a Roots game just to have it can't get canceled for, you know, bad turf or something. I'm gonna assume, you know, somewhere kind of direct. I mean, like, I would love to do a cross country trip like that. I have done Tampa to New York City on Amtrak before, because my sister-in-law did not want to fly. And that was an experience that I'm not eager to repeat anytime soon. But I, like, right now, I'd do Tampa to Charleston. But if Jacksonville gets that Austin spot, Jacksonville's right kind of in midway of that route. I would do a Jacksonville train trip and back. Sure, I would miss the opportunity to buy goat sandwiches from a burnt-out RV across from a truck stop when the mob bus pulls over, but I kind of like the idea of Jacksonville there and back on the train. What about you?
Likewise, I've done a Amtrak trip from back when I was a child. The year that Florida had the crazy amount of wildfires, back in 97, I think it was. We did a train trip up to, you know, Pennsylvania, and yeah, that was an experience, because we were stuck on the tracks and delayed and rerouted for about 12 hours or something like that. So it was a lot of fun. I remember that experience. That was memorable. The Charleston through Jacksonville was definitely one. I'm taking that option right now, just because that is a really tough question if you've never ridden a train in 20 years.
Yeah. There's also, like, Miami's really, also not.
Like, Patrick, we love you, but that's a really specific question with a caveat.
Like, I really want to do I found this, someone had written about this, like, the least expensive way to take, like, Amtrak across the U.S. and back. I'd love to do that route and just spend all the time in the observation car looking at all the stuff going by. I would do that. All right, next up, David Morales, who apparently was reading our minds before we went on air and brought a little U.S. national team talk into it. I heard someone say they would pick Dempsey for a street game and Donovan on the soccer field. Who has that dynamic on the Rowdies? So who from the Rowdies would you pick for a street game, and who would you pick for a game on a pitch?
Well, I think you'd be crazy to not pick Lewis Hilton for the street match.
Ooh. First names in my head were, like, Tejada or Guinzotti, just like...
No, you need a bully. You're going street match? You need a bully. I would take Lewis Hilton in a heartbeat for that. For a proper soccer match, Leo Fernandez.
Trick answer. I take Evan Lauro for both. Right?
That's amazing.
It makes perfect sense. Absolutely. All right, next up from Carlos. Are we going to have too many forwards when Steven and Juan come back soon, or do they all have their distinct traits that'll boost the squad? 7 losses out of the last 10. We just got shut out by Charlotte. We can't have too many forwards at this point, in my opinion. But no, they do have, like especially those, like the two he mentioned there, Juan and Steven. You could not, you know, it's like when the Bucks had Mike Allstott and Warwick Dunn, and they were like, yeah, you got the Thunder and Lightning backfield. That's Steven Dos Santos and Juan Tejada, like two very different styles capable of getting to the same spot in different ways.
So if you look at it right now, if all of them are healthy, they all have different dynamics to them. All of them. Jordan Adebayo Smith is looking for through balls. That's his thing. He wants an open field that he can use his speed on. He's the best of all of them at that option. Lucky M. Kasana is really good at finding space on crosses late in the game. Mm-hmm. He's a super sub. That's literally what he's built for some reason. And he almost did it against Charlotte. He actually has a header that went just outside the post. But you know what? I think he was offsides on that play. But he almost did legitimately get a header goal. Offsides or not, that would have been hilarious. But that's what he's good at. For some reason, he's just really good at finding those spaces when we're looking for crosses late in the game against a team that's bunkering. And we're just, you know, it is what it is. Juan Tejada is an all-around workhorse. He goes around, he pressures, he's constantly in your face, and he's also got an uncanny nose for goal in the middle of the box when there's a scrum. Nobody knows why, but just people tend to lose his positioning, and that's where he gets his goals from. Sebastian Gonzatti is a bit more of an all-around type player. He doesn't go through balls, but he has a tendency of dropping into spaces better than everybody else. Whether it's a ball down the line to Connor Antley or to Leo Fernandez, they take it to the end line. Maybe they turn towards goal towards the very end. Gonzatti has a good ability at reading the play to say, I have an opportunity to drop back towards the penalty spot, take myself off of that back line, the back defenders, and have an option for them to drop it back to take that shot. Sebastian Gonzatti also tends to drop back further into the play during open play to try and collect some of those balls and distribute out maybe wide or recycle, as you know the phrase is used. That's what he's good at. Dos Santos is a great target guy. If you're looking to just boot balls up the field, to have somebody that can, you know, win the ball and hold it to create possession, that's what Dos Santos does. And guess what? He does that better than anybody else. We can boot balls in his direction, and he's not just going to win it, but he's also going to keep it. It also means that he can muscle some defenders out of the way if he needs to, as we've seen once or twice to poor Darnell King against Phoenix. You know, like, he's got the ability at kind of muscling some defenders out of the way. He does that better than anybody. You already see every one of these strikers before everybody's healthy, each with their own dynamics, own playing styles, and as a result, each of them can offer us a different tool depending on the opponent and the tactical situation.
So step one, get everyone healthy. Step two, play them all at one time, because then you've got your choice of how you're going to score.
Pretty much.
Just like 5 forwards. So 5 forwards, 3 defenders, and, you know, Lewis Hilton and someone else in the midfield, and we're good.
You know, we keep talking about strikers and goal scorers, and I still want to see what Luis Fernando looks like.
Yeah.
The dude is built. Have you ever seen, like we've seen him in person, right?
Yeah, we've seen him walk around the office, yeah, for the pregame stuff, yeah.
That dude is thick, man. And, like, if he can play as good as his body structure is, that could be a legitimately exciting player for us. And, like, basically none of us really know anything about him except from a couple right. of, like, very light sessions that we've happened to see him at, you know, just lightly kicking a ball around. We really don't know what he looks like at full speed. We don't really have tape on him. You know, he wasn't in the league before. We really don't know anything about the guy except for a light couple of light passing sessions. I want to know what he looks like on the field.
Mm-hmm.
That more than anything else, because we know what everybody else looks like. I want to know what he looks like on a pitch.
He's been back in training. Maybe we'll get a chance to see him sometime soon. Gross. All right, next question from JD at Mom Says I'm Ultra. Do you guys think the Florida Tropics go back-to-back in UPSL Spring National Championships this weekend? So based on the things that I know that JD tweets about, I still am not sure if this is about soccer, lacrosse, or esports. But I think the answer he wants to hear is yes. So yes, absolutely.
I don't know if he knows this, but Tropic season doesn't run in spring, so I don't understand the question. No.
Hey, look, you're playing. We're watching the 2020 Olympics in 2021 right now, so anything can happen.
I honestly don't know enough about them to give an educated answer, but I mean, it's lower division. It's amateur soccer, really. I mean, anybody can do anything. Of course, they have an opportunity to win it. Absolutely.
Coin flip. NWSL to Tampa. I like this account, by the way. If Rowdy's NWSL/USLW happens, do you think they'll make a new logo with the insert female equivalent of Ralph on it instead of Ralph? So the new crest only with a female Ralph.
That's not how club crests work, though.
I think they end up going. Like, I don't think it's like Rowdy's Women. I think it's a separate name. And maybe it's the same colors. Maybe it's, you know, you got, you know, green and gold hoop jerseys or something. But I think it's a different name. And I'm okay with that.
I think it's probable that would be the route that they take. I don't see. I mean, it's, oh, man, that's such a tough decision because I think that's the route that they take. But it would be interesting to know if that's the route that most people would want them to take if there was a massive like fan base wide poll for that where you could actually get like 1,000 responses to it, not like, you know, 24. It'd be interesting to know what people would actually want.
Be interesting. I kind of like the idea of a separate identity. Let them establish their own identity, be their own thing as part of the family.
I think from a branding standpoint, it's just easier in general because otherwise it's the Tampa Rowdies and the Tampa Rowdies Women or you know, some extra nomenclature because you can't just call them the same thing. You can't just say Tampa Rowdies and Tampa Rowdies.
Right.
Like, it's just, I know there are people out there that want that to be the case. It just doesn't work. That's unrealistic. So,
all right, next one. I think this might be the last one. We'll see. Again, from David Morales. Now, I'm not, capital, all capitals, not Collins out yet.
Oh, gosh.
But how much longer? I know you kind of responded to this one already, but how much longer does he have before Collins out seems realistic? Stewart was 4-5 when he was fired. I believe Collins might be 9-6, but we haven't been able to beat a team after playing them. Loudon doesn't count because they're not real. And there hasn't been big change. So I'm in the same boat where I'm not advocating for a change. But I am curious because, like, you know, even we lost three, you know, the three straight before beating Loudon again recently. You know, it's one of those, like, that hasn't happened. Like, the last time we lost three, or I believe it might have been before, if you include Open Cup, in a row was when a change was made. And I don't think a change should be made, but I'm curious, does that, like, feeling, maybe is it contributing to it? Maybe a lack of a sense of urgency. Like, I, first of all, I don't think that move would be made. And also on a personal level, I don't want that move to be made, but I wonder if, you know, kind of knowing that situation, I don't know that it necessarily helps. Like,
no, Neil Collins has absolutely no matter what happens, Neil Collins is coach at the end of the year. No doubt about it. I don't think there's any question about that at all. I think that you would have to see a pretty disastrous run of results to actually have a legitimate case where Collins needs to be questioned into the future. And I'm talking like of the 17 games remaining, like literally only winning like four or five of them.
And he coaches the rest of them in like a purple shirt.
I mean, yeah. But like legitimately, like several, like of the, you know, let's say he wins four, he loses 10. And of those 10, he loses, say, seven of them by more than one goal. Like something absolutely catastrophically devastating, you know, for this team. First of all, I don't think that's going to happen. Secondly, even if it, I mean, it would take that to be the case. If it's anything, right, if it's anything other than that, like let's say the Rowdies go 500 for the rest of the year. Right. Let's take the 17 games and let's go. Let's just say 5-5-2 or what is it? 5-10-15-17. So 5-5-7-5. Let's just say that. Right. I don't think there's a scenario where Collins isn't the coach going into next season.
I don't think so either.
I think he would absolutely still be the coach if that would be the case.
And the only situation I see where he's not here is if he gets another opportunity that's a big step up.
And that's always the wild card scenario. But in a discussion like this, you can't account for that because that's going to be random. You never know. Right. I mean, obviously, there's always going to be scenarios where potentially somebody comes knocking and pays better and more prestigious and it's a step up. You know, I mean, that opportunity is always going to be there.
Because honestly, I've seen comments online from people in Europe saying, you know, who might be a dark horse candidate for, you know, so-and-so second division, third division opening is a former Sheffield player, Neil Collins, doing big things with Tampa Bay Rowdies over in the U.S. Like, I could see that as a possibility. The thing is, though, and this is the other half of this question that doesn't get asked, is who do you replace him with?
I don't want to get into that.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you make the move if you believe you can improve. And I don't think you can. I mean, there's only one name out there that would probably jump to everyone's mind first, and it's John Hackworth with his resume, with his local connections, with, you know, everything else. But kind of, you know, from some of the whispers and things that have gone around about his exit in Louisville, I don't know that's an improvement, to be honest. Also, I don't know that he wants to work in the structure that would be here, considering what the amount of control he seemed to have in Louisville.
Yeah, Hackworth would definitely be an option, and I think if he's available, I'd be surprised if he was available and wanted the job, it'd be interesting to see if the Rowdies would not take him. I think if he is available, I think the Rowdies would do it by default unless there was something else more obvious. It'd be just a question of interest. I think if he wanted the job, I think if something happens and Neil does leave, like within the next like year or whatever, and Hackworth was interested in the job, I honestly believe that they would give it to him. I would say that's a pretty confident thing at the moment.
But it also feels like the safe move.
Of course it is. Well, Matt, do we have any other viewer questions, or are
some more questions? And we could do a quick preview of Red Bulls 2, but they're bad.
They're bad, and we should win.
We should
That's
win.
That's the preview. We're bad. They're bad. We should win.
They're especially bad at home. Which
here's my preview. Don't play Steinberger as a striker, for the love of God. That's my preview. That's my request. That's my prediction. That's what I want to not see happening. I'd actually be okay with playing Jordan Adebayo in this game, considering what happened the first time around. I think that's my biggest pet peeve. I think that's my biggest thing right there.
Yeah. One thing to keep an eye out for on this game, Lewis Hilton does have 4 yellow cards and is now on accumulation warning. So keep an eye on how this game unfolds. USL hasn't put out a discipline report in like 3 weeks. So I don't know, without going back and tracking down all the games where all these players got cards, New York's got 2 guys with 8, 1 with 7, 1 on 5. Like, who knows? I don't think anyone's suspended, though. I haven't heard anything about it. I tried looking on their site. There's nothing. Let's get out of here. We're on the wrong side of almost 2 hours now.
Yep. Well, thank you to Wolfface for providing amazing introductory music. Radio St. Pete Online for giving us a platform for doing our shows live every week, and Shamrock Pub, our super secret base location during the pandemic, and of course for all of our in-person live broadcasts. Please, if you are listening to this podcast, give it a share. Subscribe to it if you have that option. Rating it if you have that option. Giving or dropping a review. All of those little things help us. It gets our name out there. It helps permeate us through the Rowdies fan base. And that's what ultimately we want. We want to make sure that everybody has a place to go to for their Rowdies news and league news and whatever else news.
It causes emails from very random potential advertisers to show up in my inbox. Mama,
which
we made it.
Line helps fund new equipment, which is all good. If you want to take your individual support to the next level, Patreon is the number one place to do that. Starting as little as $1 a month, you can become a monthly contributor to the show and to our success. Absolutely the number one way to do that. And at the higher levels, upwards of like, say, $10 a month, if you feel so inclined, you do become a Patreon executive producer of the show, and we will give your name a shout during the opening sequences of the show, because you absolutely deserve it. Thank you to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, official scarf supplier to MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get your custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com. And if you are tired of the same old uniforms and cookie cutter templates from Nike and Adidas, if you are looking for a unique and completely custom kit for your youth club, Sunday league squad, adult, or even pro team, Icarus FC can help you create the kit of your dreams at an affordable price. Let them help you design your new custom kit today at IcarusFC.com. Matt, we come to the end. I have a lot of editing to do. Well, to everybody that sent in your questions, that was interacting on Twitter, thank you. We always appreciate it. We always enjoy knowing that people are listening and interacting with us during the live broadcast. It's always a very good, helpful, reinforcing moments. We will see you again next week for the next podcast, live broadcast episode. And then after that is a Rowdies home game, where, of course, we'll be on Rowdies Twitch for the in-person pregame show. Though I don't know if I'll be able to make that or not, but remains to be seen, as it is a Friday night.
The next, that means I might be doing that one solo, because Dan's out of town.
Maybe I can get off work earlier. We'll see how that works. Either way, Rowdies, New York this weekend. Go Rowdies. Let's take care of business. Let's get a W. Get things kind of back on track a little bit here, because we love you. So let's go Rowdies.
Absolutely. All right, let's get out of here so I can get out of here. The ride is on here.